Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. We are now going to switch gears. Before we do, I want to remind you the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by the Maryland State Education Association. For the fifth year in a row, Maryland public schools have been named number one in the country by Education Week magazine. Visit MarylandEducators.org to explore what it means to invest in our students, school construction and safety, and the educators' programs and services that make our schools a national leader. That's MarylandEducators.org. We're going to switch gears and bring us back home here to Baltimore. As you know, we've been covering the issue around homelessness in this city with some intensity. After the man was murdered in the homeless shelter here in Baltimore, we're going to reopen that conversation about homeless shelters. We've had guests lined up here today. Linda Boyer was invited. She's not here yet. Hopefully she'll arrive soon. She's the executive director. Of Jobs, Housing, and Recovery, known as JHR, the program contracted by the City of Baltimore to run the Code Blue Shelter, as it's known, where the man was murdered. We have here Bonnie Lane is in the studio. She's a local activist who has been homeless herself. She's a journalist who's editorial on the editorial board of Word on the Street, Baltimore's new street newspaper. She's also a member of Housing Our Neighbors. We're also joined by Tony Simmons. He's been homeless now for 15 months. A member of Housing Our Neighbors as well, and member of the Residential Council for the Housing Resource Center. And Tony and Bonnie, welcome. Good to have you both in the studio.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, folks, the lines are open, 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. I'm probably going to also read some of the letters to the editor that came to The Sun so that people can respond to those themselves and that they came out. I wanted to hear your thoughts on those, but you can join us here at 410-319-8888. So you were there the night that your friend Dana was murdered.
Yes, I was.
The morning, I mean.
Yeah, the morning.
Tony, welcome. So you were telling me a bit about it before we went on the air. So we'd heard the people around the shelter saying that it happened outside, but then we double-checked with the police who said it actually did happen inside the shelter. So tell us what happened.
Same as always. Two guys get an argument in a day room. And
always? You think these arguments happen a lot?
It happens every day. All day, every day inside that day room. And they got in a little argument, and one challenged the other one to go outside. So Dana said, okay, let's go outside. I'm standing there on the outside of the Fallsway. I'm looking through the door, and I'm watching them both going out the back entrance, exit. Door. And so I decided to walk around the building to see, try to intervene somehow because he's a friend of mine. But by the time I got back around, everybody's running, looking, and pointing. So I got to the door that we enter from the parking lot. There was Dana already up the steps and lying on the floor. And I'm watching staff members just running around screaming, and then the sirens started. I'm like, I didn't know he was stabbed or injured. I just thought there was a fight, and he probably got hit pretty hard or something like that. But then I just seen all the blood and the people panicking all over the place, and I stood back because I knew my friend was really hurt really bad.
But you were saying that you didn't stay in that shelter.
No, I never stay in HRC shelters. Way too much confusion in that shelter.
But the overflow shelter that you go to is not also run by HRC?
No, that's run by Baltimore Station. They are a separate group.
Baltimore Station runs it?
Baltimore Station runs the overflow.
Huh. That's the place where recovering addicts, they have a couple firehouses in town that they work.
Yes, the
but
same
they also, way. They also have a shelter.
Yeah, they run the city overflow.
So that's fairly well run?
Yeah, they're pretty good, I mean, we have problems over there, but nothing to this magnitude.
So why don't you like staying in the other shelter?
Too much confusion.
What do you mean by too much confusion?
The way the place is run, you have staff that's not fully trained. They come up with rules. They just make them up as they go along.
Like what?
Like head count. Head count usually be at 11:30 a.m. Then they can switch it to noon or switch it back to 11, whatever time they feel that they have enough people to count it, and they just make it up as they go along. So in that shelter, it's like you're locked in at 11:30 in the afternoon. You can't go anywhere. You can't handle any kind of business. You can't go see your doctor. or a social worker. I have people that I see every day at Healthcare for the Homeless. They actually leave our men's group where they can get resources just to get back in the shelter so they can get a bed, so they can be counted. No one should have to make the decision to see their doctor. Remember, I'm talking about doctors. I'm talking about mental health therapists or their psychiatrists, and they have to make a choice. You know, will I get a bed so I can get a meal, or do I see my doctor so I can take care of my problems? So and it's just a lot of confusion.
Now, let me open the phones here, 410-319-8888. And we will get some callers in here. Before we do that, our other guest just did arrive, Linda Boyer, who's Executive Director of Jobs, Housing, and Recovery, JHR, the program that runs, is contracted by the City of Baltimore to run Code Blue Shelter. Good to have you in the studio with us. Welcome.
Thank you.
And the number is 410-319-8888. But as I said, let's go right to the phones here. And Robert, you're on the air.
Hey, Mark. How you doing?
Very well. Welcome.
Yeah, I work with WEAC Radio and DC Media Group, and I reported on Camp 83 situation for four times within a week. Those four evenings that I was out there, there were emergency vehicles over at HRC, and not once were there problems over at Camp 83. But speaking to the HRC situation, I listened to Jeff Singer and Katie Burdell on was it Don Roderick's show today, and I was very troubled with the editorial of Baltimore Sun piece that he chose, and it was a comment about a Baltimore Sun article about somebody saying that there are so many services in Baltimore, and it made it sound extravagant, like the homeless people are living in such luxury. It was troubling. And the other thing that this person referred to in that editorial piece was that it's a bustling business that people have to walk past these camps. And as far as I could tell, there is a jail. There is a freeway and a jail. Maybe some prison workers had to walk past.
Right.
You know, the homeless people, but Mark, you and I met out there. I met people there at the camp. They were very friendly people. They weren't dangerous. I don't know. This whole situation is just very troublesome.
Robert, I appreciate you being part of the show, and I do want to welcome our newest guest, Linda Boyer, to the studio. Good to have you here.
Hi, Mark.
Let's talk about this. We were just talking earlier that Tony Simmons, who witnessed what happened there, and you interview a number of homeless people on the streets, which we've done, especially around the encampment and before that, who just feel unsafe in shelters, whether it's yours or anybody else's. Can you speak to that?
Well, anytime you don't have your home and you lock your door, you're not going to be completely safe. But as far as our shelter goes, it's very safe. The staff works very, very hard to make sure that everything is quiet and calm. We're unique to Baltimore because we're a wet shelter. We're the only wet shelter.
What does that mean, wet shelter?
It means that you can come in if you're high or you're drunk, and as long as you behave yourself and play by the rules, you can stay. And so we have very little activity, and what we do have is handled very quickly. The police come. Their response time is very quick, and as is the hospitals if somebody needs medical attention. So for the most part, there just aren't a lot of really serious altercations. Anytime you put 275 people in a building, and especially in confined quarters, people are not going to get along. They're going to argue and maybe even punch. But that's the extent of it, really. So for the most part, people are very, very safe.
I disagree, not because I don't believe of what you're hearing from your staff members, but I'm a member of BMAR Housing for All, a homeless advocacy group, and I've heard of at least three stabbings at the shelter, only one resulting in a fatality within the past 5 months, and several instances of more than punching going on of staff assaulting clients with radios, etc., coming directly from the people who stay in your shelter.
Well, wait, look, Linda, come on. We've had a brief break and come right back. So 410-319-8888. Join us here. Don't go away. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. After the stabbing death at a homeless shelter in Baltimore, we have decided to bring a topic here to the airwaves. We have with us Linda Boyer, who's Executive Director of Jobs, Housing, and Recovery, JHR, the program contracted by the city to run the Code Blue Shelter, which is where the stabbing took place, the killing took place. Tony Simmons is with us, who's a friend of Dana's, who was murdered that day, homeless now for 15 months, member of Housing Our Neighbors, and a member of the Residential Council for a Housing Resource Center, which will in a moment bring up some of his thoughts as a residential counselor in a moment that he said during the break. Bonnie Lane is with us again, local activist, formerly homeless, member of Housing Our Neighbors, and a journalist now who is on the editorial board of Word on the Street, Baltimore's new street newspaper. The number here is 410-319-8888. We'll come to those calls in just a minute. One of the reasons that we hear that people don't want to go into shelters is the time constraints, that people may have medical appointments, people may have job interviews or want to go into a job training program, but if they have to report so early in the day, you said 11:30 in the morning?
11:30 in the morning.
To secure a bed for that evening, and they're up at 5:30 and out the door, is that what you said?
Yeah, the overflow, we out the door about 5.
About 5, in the overflow. So it seems like the people who are homeless and using shelters, whether it's temporary or almost seems like permanent for some people, that they're stuck between a rock and a hard place. Why do they have to report so early in the day?
Well, because we have so many homeless people on the street and there's so much demand for beds. There's more than our shelter. There's shelters, other shelters in the city that they could access as well that don't have the kind of structure. But we've got to figure out a way to accommodate everybody who's coming to the shelter and needs to have a bed. And so we set aside a certain time and they check in and they get their beds. One of the problems that we have is that if we don't get the check-in and they don't get the bed, then they leave later in the evening and they don't come back, and so the bed is empty. And we don't know if they're going to come back. So, you know, that's a problem.
Why do people have to check in so early? I mean, it seems to me that one of the problems is that when people check in at 11:30 in the morning, that precludes them being able to do anything else for their own betterment, for the health care, finding a job. One man that actually did a surreptitious taping inside of one of the shelters, mm-hmm. we have not seen yet, I'm looking forward to seeing, was saying that, look, he's in a job training program. He can't, if he gets there at 11:30 in the morning, he can't go to his job training. And so that's why he was sleeping in a tent under 83. So, I mean,
right.
why can't you open the shelter at 4 o'clock in the afternoon or 5 o'clock in the afternoon and just say, okay, you're here, you're here, you're here, you're here. You're here.
The shelter acts as a drop-in center during the day, and it converts to a overnight shelter at 5:30. I don't know about the 11 o'clock. I don't run the shelter on a daily basis. I have supervisors that do that, so I really can't address that part of it. What I know is that at 3:30, everybody starts lining up, and we put people in beds at that particular time so that we can get them fed. There's 275 people plus. There's another 100 plus that get on buses to go to overflow shelter. And we still take more in the evening, and they sleep on the floor on mats in the day rooms. So there's a lot of people moving and a lot of demand. And to customize a need for every individual is nearly impossible. We are addressing some of the issues for people that work or go to school. We're trying to figure out some other solutions with the city. To be able to accommodate those individuals. But again, this is a drop-in center during the day. It's a shelter at night, and it's meant to be a temporary housing situation. We place roughly 35 people a month out of that shelter into locations throughout the city, various apartments and houses and rooms and whatever's appropriate and whatever they can afford, as well as sending other people to detox and some of the other programs that are around. So it's just a lot of people that have to move.
So is it 11:30 or 3:30 you have to be there? I'm confused.
You have to be there by 11:30. The staff will make up their own time. I'm on that parking lot every single day. They'll change the time. It can be 11:30, 11:45, or this particular day something may go on. They say, well, I'll be back by 11:45. What she's speaking of is once you the people in the building get counted, if they don't have 175, they may be 15 or 20 short, then they'll come outside and pick up the people who's standing on the rail. The people on that rail probably been standing there for 3, 4, 5 hours hoping to be selected in the little group that would fill the rest of their beds. I'm out there every day. I see what goes on. If the problem is not putting everybody in the day room, it's about you have a staff at HRC who is not trained. When this incident occurred, the staff there were running all over the place. They had no clue of what to do. They didn't know how to assist this man. They didn't know who called 911. They didn't know where to direct them because the police were running around. They didn't know because the calls were so frantic. No one took charge. No one said clear out. No, they contaminated the crime scene because they let people move all around the building. So that's why no one know where it happened and when it happened.
So,
I'd like to comment.
Please, do.
We have the entire event on tape. I had the opportunity to review the tape today. The gentleman was stabbed outside the shelter. He came into the shelter for assistance. He was immediately met by a staff member. He wasn't even aware himself yet, and you can tell it on the tape, that he had been stabbed. As soon as the staff realized that he was injured, 911 was called, and the police responded immediately, as did the ambulances and emergency medical. And the staff assisted him, laid him down on the floor. You can see it all happening. The movement that was happening were clients that staff was trying to get out of the way. Anytime someone gets injured, there's a certain amount of confusion, a certain amount of worry or mistrust or angst about what's going on. But the staff are well trained. They're trained consistently, and they handled it beautifully. And in fact, we talked to the police afterwards. The police did a great investigative process. The detectives viewed the tape immediately, and went on about doing other things so that they could close the case and make an arrest.
So, what are you suggesting when people say they don't want to be in shelters? They're scared about being in shelters. Women are saying that a lot. But so what is the alternative? I mean, what would you do in terms of for temporary housing other than what you see happening here?
Can I have this one? I would take the 57,000 vacant houses and let homeless people and other people who want to volunteer with skills turn them into livable, affordable housing, temporary and permanent. I would then partner with different labor organizations such as Community Churches United to give the people transferable skills for that they could use for employment. I mean, we have the housing. We have the people that need the housing. We just need the willpower and city government to get it done.
But in terms of the shelter that exists at the moment, how would you run it differently than it's being run? I mean, what in the few minutes we have left, what are you suggesting should happen?
Well, if the place is called Job Housing Recovery, let's start by getting people jobs. Let's start by getting housing and resources. I'm in that shelter. There's nothing to do in that shelter but sit in that day room looking at that TV screen. Nothing else. You've got all these people sitting there. They're frustrated. They're angry. They can't go anywhere. It's like a powder keg. It's going to explode. This is not going to stop. The summer is upon us. This is not going to stop. It's only going to increase.
So we only have a couple minutes left in this segment. I want to let Laura have a response to that. Linda,
sure,
excuse me,
be
sorry.
Happy to. We have roughly 18 agencies that come to the shelter every day to provide services to the clients that are there. Before we started the shelter, people used to be in the parks and hanging out different places, and case managers had to go and find them. Now, because they're in the shelter, the case managers can come and find their client in the shelter, so they're not running all over the city. That's number one. We have our own case managers who assist. in helping people get appointments and make referrals and things like that. Our problem is that many people do want to get off the street. They want an apartment. They want a job. But there's an equally large amount of people who are unable to do that for various reasons.
So we do have to take a break here. I apologize for that and turn to Delegate Carter and Chris Brown on the line waiting to come on. Mm-hmm. But there's a real disconnect here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of disconnect here.
Major disconnect here.
I mean, if you want people that stay in the shelter, start by giving them hope. If you start housing one and then another and create jobs, get them out of there. You have people who's in shelters for a long time. I don't believe anybody ever woke up one morning and said, you know what? I want to be homeless. I'm going to go live in a shelter. I'm going to live underneath 83 Bridge and lay in the mud and in the dirt and the cold and all the noise. Becoming homeless is not a choice. It's something that happens to everybody sometime. No one's looking for a handout, a hand up. And if the shelters are not going to do it, especially the city shelter.
So, Tony, you have had the last word for today, but we'll come back to this as we continue to cover the issue of homelessness in our community and what to do about it. Tony Simmons, homeless now for 15 months, is a member of Housing Our Neighbors. And Bonnie Lane, formerly homeless, is now active in homeless as an advocate, journalist for Word on Our Street, the newest newspaper in our town, and Linda Boyer, who is executive director of Jobs, Housing, and Recovery, that runs the Code Blue Shelter. Thank you all for being here. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we're going to switch gears here. We're taking a break. I'm going right into it. A little direction. Guess a quick break. We're going to come right back with Delegate Jill Carter and Chris Brown to talk about a bill they're trying to get through the House.